Hello, everybody. I'm Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. James Romer continues his streak as being our most frequent guest on this podcast. We're talking weather and commodities and how they relate. He lives in Florida, but we're going to talk about California. We're going to talk about ocean temperatures. We're going to talk about his call on what are the prospects of a hot, dry summer again in the Corn Belt. Is La Nina done? Is El Nino here? Are we stuck in neutral? What does this mean? What should you do depending on where you're at? We're going to go through a lot of maps. I know a lot of you listen to this podcast. This might be, again, one of those you want to watch on our YouTube channel to see some of the charts. James does a pretty good job of describing what's in his chart. So if you're catching up somewhere that doesn't have the video, you should be just fine. But just letting you know, this might be one to watch video-wise. New episodes come out each and every Tuesday. We love hearing from you. Send me an email at paul.yeager@iowapbs.org. Like, rate, review, subscribe, follow, do whatever it is that you can do to continue to support this podcast. I appreciate each and every one of you that listens and sends me a note. It's great to hear from you. Now, let's hear from James Romer. James, now wait a minute. You're in Florida. How dare you try to trick us that you're trying to be? Are you sympathetic to California and their winter weather woes?
I'm a big skier. You know, I lived in Des Moines many years ago. I'd drive up to the Afton Alps, elevation 600 feet. That was fun, actually. This is mammoth. But 60 feet of snow or something like that, there's so much they can't even ski. But this kind of situation we look at, you know, from record snows out west to the atmospheric rivers over my shoulder there to the tornado season, one of the most active in 30 years. This is how we put our long range forecast together for Midwestern grain farmers.
And that's why I love having you on, James. It's so fun. You're the most frequent guest we've had on the podcast. So you need to get like a belt or a bell or something that indicates it. Yeah, maybe we'll get you a hat.
Iowa PBS hat.
There you go. I love it. All right. Let's start with the snow because, yes, crazy amounts of snow. What does that mean? We know what it means for water in lakes and reservoirs in California and other states of the West. But why is there so much snow?
Well, first of all, I think this multi-year La Nina is weakening. And we also saw the Arctic warm to historical warm levels this winter. And all that cold air from the what we call negative Arctic Oscillation Index bled across California. Now, if that would have moved 1,000 miles further east, natural gas prices would not be at $2. It'd be back to $5 or $6. All the natural gas areas were spared all the cold, but out west across California, unbelievable. And you can see the cooler ocean temperatures in response to all that snow and, you know, like 700 inches of snow at Snowbird, Utah ski area forecasted for 25 years. The cool PDO. That's going to have implications for grain belt weather this summer. And notice the cooling, kind of the arrow there. That may prevent El Nino from forming as quickly. You need that warming in the Central Pacific east of Australia. So the atmospheric rivers and snow can, in a sense, delay the onset of El Nino that everybody's getting so excited about right now.
Is this a chicken-egg thing? Which came first, the cool ocean temperatures or all the snow?
Right. All the snow first and the trough off the coast of California for 3 or 4 months has been sitting there with, you know, one atmospheric river after another. Look at this over my head. Unbelievable. And it's a combination of, I believe, somewhat climate change, record warm oceans all over the world. We've never seen this in thousands of years. The negative Arctic Oscillation Index, the warming block over the Arctic Circle, pushing the cold air south, and a weakened La Nina. All this has created this incredible cooling you see off the coast of California right now. And the intense warming you see there off Peru, yes, that's a sign of El Nino, but only if it expands further west. And that cool PDO, the negative PDO we call it, the Pacific Dictatorial Isolation Index, again, may prevent that warming from going further west until perhaps the fall.
And these atmospheric rivers, as they keep flowing, that is allowing for precipitation. Right? That's how the moisture channels through. So One of the theories that you mentioned climate change. There was a theory out that since it is warmer, the air can hold more moisture, hence why we're having more precipitation. Is that bunk?
Yeah, I do believe so. I mean, you know, there's so much political jargon and fighting back and forth, different points of view, whether climate change really exists. I mean, just look what's going on in the world. I mean, we never had a La Nina in history in 80 to 90 years that I can recall that we had record warm winters and summers in Europe. Well, there's a reason for that, because the oceans are warming up so much. And as a result, you have to see some equilibrium somewhere. It has to offset that warming ocean. And where's that happening? Off the coast of California. That's the only real cool spell we see in the entire planet right now. So anyway, hopefully that answers your question.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit. So when we have La Nina, do you think we're out of La Nina? You kind of talked about if El Nino is forming, which means we have to leave La Nina. So do you think we're still in a La Nina pattern as we sit here in mid-April?
Well, we're in a situation. Notice this. It's called the La Nina Mocada, cool in the central Pacific there and warm off the coast of Peru. That will begin the weekend more toward a neutral as we get into the summer. But it's really going to be a timing situation right now. I mean, if this cool ocean waters you see there in the Central Pacific don't warm up by July or August, there's a possibility we could have another hot, dry summer and get an explosion in grain prices this July or August again.
And you're talking hot, dry summer for the areas that were hot, dry last year, too?
Well, look at this. Yeah, I mean, this was an extension of what happened, you know, a year ago. This extreme drought you see in red across Kansas and Oklahoma is still bullish Kansas City wheat. The only thing is that wheat prices are relatively high price right now, given history, and you have good weather in Europe and also maybe some rains in Russia and Australia. Otherwise, wheat prices could go over $10. It's really the hard red crop that's been affected, not the soft red crops around the world, which is kind of bearish. We've seen the spreads widen between KC wheat and Chicago wheat because of this drought in the plains, whereas the rest of the world is actually, as I mentioned, relatively good shape. But look at that red still in the northwestern Corn Belt. If that continues into May or June, then the corn market will start getting pretty excited again about possible drought.
I have a relative by marriage in the Sioux City area, and we talk about the weather quite often. And she had mentioned last winter, they just never had the snow. This winter, didn't really have the snow. Snow is one thing in the Midwest. It's the rain that happens. We need rain in that part of Nebraska. You see that big, very dark red circle in Nebraska from, say, that's north of Lincoln up to Sioux City on the northeast part of the state. Does that spread? What would make that spread and have a bigger footprint? Because if you look 200 miles to the east in Iowa, the gradient, there's not much difference between there's a dramatic difference between west and east in Iowa.
So really the key is Nina 1.2, okay? This is, as I mentioned before, where it's warming near my head there, right, off the coast of Peru. And let me just go through this for a second. So if we see just a warming Nina 1.2 and not a full-fledged El Nino, look how the month of May into early June is kind of weather normal over the far northwest Corn Belt in blue. Look just to the south of the Corn Belt there along the Gulf, it's red. So it's right on the border in Iowa. We may begin to get wetter weather here over the next 6 weeks, begin to relieve that drought, particularly it looks like in the northern plains. Even though there's been a lot of snow cover, there's still a slight drought. Once all that rain snowfall melts here over the next few weeks, and given that possibility of that warming at Nina 1.2, that drought should begin to be relieved here over the next 4 to 6 weeks in the far northwest Corn Belt and the spring wheat areas, temporarily at least.
Let's go back to your drought monitor there for a minute. Your head is covering up some very good corn-producing states.
All right, folks.
Ohio.
I love you.
Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin. They can produce some corn there. Is this an opportunity for producers in that region that maybe it's going to be a moderate rainfall amount and allows them to maybe make up some of the difference that the Western Corn Belt might not be making if it's still in drought?
Yeah, I mean, over the last three summers, the droughts have been in the Western Corn Belt or up across the Pacific Northwest and the plains. You know, a good opportunity to probably hedge corn and beans. I mean, we haven't seen, you know, $5.50 to $6 corn, you know, very often. It has been the case the last year or two because of a combination of droughts in the Midwest and also Argentina. But the whole situation with Taiwan and China, a lot of unknowns. I mean, if there's a, God forbid, another trade war, you know, we do have good moisture, which is very likely over the central to eastern two-thirds of the Corn Belt. Then corn could go back down to $4.50 or $4 at the end of the summer, and beans maybe back down to 9 or 10. So it's a good opportunity for central and eastern Corn Belt farmers to probably hedge some of their crop.
If you're in the West, we hear these stories of, I'm going to go western Kansas into Oklahoma, crops, several wheat crops that have not come up in a row because it's so dry. Any chance of relief for them in Southwest Kansas?
Well, I do see some rain coming in over the next week to 2 weeks, but the key jointing stage and heading stage is over the next 4 to 6 weeks. That's when the crop is made. And right now, given a lot of my analogs and studies that I'm looking at right now, you can see most of the rain really is going to be over the Western through Northwestern Corn Belt, mainly the spring wheat areas. Right along the Gulf Coast there, Texas may get some rain, but in between that, I don't see a lot of relief, unfortunately. And part of that's because we still have what we call this La Nina Modicae. There's still this central Pacific cooling ocean temperatures. And as a result, La Nina typically means dry weather in the southern plains wheat areas during the spring.
So hot, dry summer, La Nina, 2.0, 1.2, what'd you call it?
Oh, okay. So again, this is to really get a full-fledged El Nino, not only should Nina 1.2 be warm, but all the way further west into the central Pacific, east of Australia. And as you see, right, it's still kind of normal to cool there where the arrow is.
Yeah.
Cool atmospheric river situation that's leading into the central Pacific. The intense warming, again, is at Nina 1.2. And if we look at this more closely, okay, maybe a wet spring in the northwestern Corn Belt. Notice though, you know, kind of cool spring Northwest Corn Belt, with that Nina 1.2, that star there is the warming. Let's go a little further here. With a Nina 1.2 being warm, notice how rainfall tends to be below normal. Look at that over the Western through Southwest Corn Belt and the plains, right? That's a concern of mine. When you have a strong El Nino, or a moderate El Nino, right, that warming extends further west, you tend to have, let's get a wet summer, right? We don't have that. We have still a weak La Nina and warming at Nina 1.2. That could suggest, see that hotter than normal weather in July and possibly drier than normal weather in July. So again, in order to get this situation with a wet July in the Western Corn Belt, what we need to do is see this warming extend much further west over the 3.4 regions. Does that make sense?
A little bit, yeah. So, okay, let's go back to those July scenarios that you have, because that you're not the first to talk about this. July looks better. What's the probability of
a wet corn belt,
one there,
right?
The wet one, wet and good for during corn pollination, right, or the dry? Is that a 50-50?
Well, I think for the wet corn belt weather, again, we have to see this warming extend much further west. And because of that negative PDO, that may not happen. So I think the chances are probably 60 to 70% right now. We're still going to have some crop production problems in the far western belt. I mean, look at this, where you see that kind of circle of red, it's a little bit hard to see. That's a temperature forecast June through August. And that is with a negative PDO and a warm Nino 1.2. Again, I'm sorry to keep going back and forth with this, but this is what that is, right?
Yes.
Intense warming and a negative PDO. And that tends to produce a warm summer over the Midwest. And possibly dry there over the Western Corn Belt once again this summer. That is my concern. Again, we have to see the warming really extend. If it wasn't for that negative PDO and all those atmospheric rivers that occurred, this would be the situation for the summer. We would have potentially, you know, $4 corn, $8 to $9 beans, yields 5 to 10% above trend line. That's still possible, but I'd say the odds are probably maybe 35 to 40% that we're going to see really record yields and an El Nino form by the summer, if that makes sense.
Only, okay, that's a much smaller. Did that change recently? Because a month ago, it seemed a little more positive.
Well, maybe other people were saying that. I don't know. I think
you've not been on that train?
I don't think El Nino is going to form until maybe the end of the summer or the fall. That's the problem. And because we still see this cooling there in the Central Pacific, the warming again, I'll keep repeating myself here, that's fine, is occurring close to Peru. What it's actually creating right now is incredible flooding. Look at this. This is the percent of normal rainfall in the next 2 weeks in Brazil.
That's Brazil.
Yeah, it's affecting some of the soybean harvest. And 3 to 500% of normal rainfall. Coffee prices, I don't think many people watch coffee, but that's been one of our best trade recommendations in my Weather Wealth newsletter. Coffee's exploded 10% here this week alone because of flooding that's going to be forming and hurting the coffee crop and delaying the sugar harvest because of this warming that's occurring off the coast of Peru. There's a very high correlation with wet weather in late April and May in northern Brazil, and they don't want that with the harvest of the end of the soybean harvest in Sao Paulo and Paraná could be delayed. And of course, sugar and coffee is going to be affected by this for sure.
Well, and those, yeah, I saw some traffic just yesterday before we recorded this about never trade things you eat because you can get burned and things can move quickly. Orange juice, sugar, and coffee. I guess you drink coffee if you're eating.
Well, so use options.
That's a whole nother thing. Yeah, use the anyway. Options. All right. Well, okay. Stick with Brazil with me there while we're in South America, James. Argentina's been pretty dry.
Yes.
The break, is that going to break anytime soon? I think North American farmers are curious about that.
There's some rain around, but obviously it's too late to help the crop. I think what are we coming in at? 27 million metric tons for the soybean crop? My goodness. That's like, what, 25% below trend line? That's unbelievable. And the only reason that beans are like $17 or $18 right now is because of a big soybean crop in Brazil, what, about 153, 155 million metric tons, and also because of the Chinese tensions with Taiwan and you know, discussions of possible trade embargoes, again, whatever. But if Brazil would have had a normal or subpar season this year, we'd be $2 higher in soybeans right now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So what does the rain mean then for that second crop of everything in Brazil?
Well, we've seen old crop soybeans actually strengthen here a little bit the last couple of days. This is as of, you know, April 11th or 12th, partly because of the tight supply situation coming out of Argentina soon, but now some harvest delays for parts of Paraná and Sao Paulo. So, the rain's beneficial for the corn crop, but there are some delays for the present soybean crop, the first soybean crop in South America.
Which, you know, I mean, it's the thought that you used to not pay attention to South America so much in the United States and Canada, but now you do. Because it's a major competitor, and, yeah. You know, if China has to go somewhere else for beans, the U.S. usually benefits in one way or another. So what happens in Brazil and Argentina does matter.
Yeah, and a lot of people are just kind of surprised that corn and soybean prices are a lot higher, given the fact, you know, we had a drought in Europe last summer that wiped out the corn crop. We had this huge drought in Argentina the last 3 or 4 months, but we're relatively high priced, you know, and the dollar is obviously affecting prices a lot. And, you know, we're beginning to see, you know, new crop corn and soybean prices kind of come off because of the ideas of potentially some moisture in the Northwest Corn Belt and increased acres this year. But it's all going to really depend, of course, on June through August weather in the Midwest.
All right. Go back to your drought map again, because again,
right. Love that.
It's always a good basis of conversation for me.
I don't want to see this anymore. We've had this for 2 years.
James, I was telling you before we started rolling, I was out in some fields today, and it's dusty out there. What do you think of the whole phrase, plant in dust, your bins will bust? Strong optimism or... An accurate forecast for this year.
You know, I think that's held true maybe, 70, 80% of the time. But during La Nina cycles, that's not always true. So we have to see this La Nina really end. I mean, officially, La Nina is gone. But that does not necessarily mean that the atmosphere cannot act like a La Nina in certain parts of the world. Again, we still have some La Nina conditions, even though La Nina has officially ended because of the warming off the coast of Peru. So that phrase maybe applied many, many years ago. During El Nino, it applies. During El Nino neutral, when we have neither La Nina or El Nino, it applies. But during a La Nina phenomenon, that doesn't always, you know, make sense, right? So I don't think so. Okay.
Well, I know you're in Florida, but in California, it's pretty white there. There's not the, we're finally seeing, you know, scenes like that have helped erase drought, I think, for the first time in several years across the state. I mean, I think they went at least 3 years without any part of the state out of drought, and now more than half of the state is out of drought. What does that mean for our food production when California is out of drought?
Yeah, you know, even though we've had, you know, 3 to 4% of our normal snowfall and rainfall out west, a lot of the aquifers need to replenish for more than just one winter. There's still some drought concerns. I think the good news is, let's go talk about hydropower. You know, a lot, millions of people out west will be able to use hydropower now for electricity. Another reason natural gas prices have actually dropped. And I think, you know, in the long run, this is certainly good news for you know, farmers, avocado, peanuts, whatever, out in California. The big negative impact, though, has been the wine industry. First, they're hit by droughts and forest fires, right?
Now, fires, yep.
Incredible snows. It's actually not beneficial for the wine industry in California. That's probably the biggest a detriment that we can see from all these extreme weather events over the last 2 years, from droughts and forest fires now to record snow and flooding.
What other maps do you have? I keep putting you back to a couple of them. I want to make sure we get everything, James, that you think we should talk about. Again, we like to discuss with you kind of that relationship between commodities and also through agriculture and the weather. What do we have now here?
So during El Nino event, everybody's, oh, we're going to have a El Nino. Everyone's talking about it. Those are the trade winds along the tropics. They blow from west to east, okay? And that brings drought to Australia. But during a normal situation or a La Nina, they blow from east to west. We still have what's called a slightly positive SOI index, Southern Oscillation Index. So even though the oceans are warming in some parts of the Pacific, as I mentioned to you, along particularly Peru, until those winds shift to the west like that, we're not going to be in an El Nino phase anytime soon. And obviously, if we go into this phase before summer, that's going to mean $4 corn, $4.50 corn, $9, $10 beans, 10% above normal yields all over the Midwest. That may not happen. We may see maybe trend line yields above normal yields in the central and eastern belt, potentially below normal again in the west. And that's because these trade winds are still somewhat in a La Nina phase. Now, if these winds shift like that from Australia along the equator, the trade winds from west to east, that would kill the hurricane season. We've had unbelievable hurricanes. I've been chasing them in Florida for 3 years. We need that in order to kill the hurricane season, which has been a record over the last 3 or 4 years. It's been crazy.
The hurricane season has been one thing. Before we rolled, you did show me some tornado maps as well. When we recorded this here in mid-April, it's been almost 3 weeks since we had a series of tornadoes go through Arkansas. Yeah. And heck, we even had some in Iowa.
It seemed a little early for us,
but... Right. That's also tied to these changing patterns, right?
Right. So one of the reasons all the computer models predicting an El Nino, I'm trying to second guess those, okay? I've given you several reasons why. The negative PDO off the coast of California from the atmospheric rivers and all the cold and snow is keeping the Central Pacific cool. The other reason is, look at this. When you have active tornado seasons in dark blue, purple there, they usually happen during La Nina, right? During El Nino, the red and orange, you tend to see less frequent tornadoes. So there's a sign with a near record number of tornadoes here in March and April that there's still some La Nina influence. And that's why I'm concerned that the Western Corn Belt and the Plains wheat areas may not see a complete break by any stretch of the imagination of this drought and could potentially see some more problems this summer. Spring and summer, yeah.
Any other maps of interest that we should look at?
Oh, boy.
You always have something that surprises me.
My newsletter, Weather Wealth. Get a free trial. Learn how to trade options and futures on the weather and get some of the best information. You know, I've been doing this for 35, 40 years, so I can help a lot of farmers and traders around the world. Other maps, you know, again, what is the negative PDO? Remember a second ago I showed that cool ocean current right off the coast from the atmospheric rivers? That's a negative PDO. See the cool and blue off the coast of California? And a warm phase is to the left. When you have a warm phase, which we don't have, that can strengthen El Nino. We just don't have that situation right now. For me to say with high confidence, all these computer models going for a record crop this summer, El Nino by May or June, I just don't see that happening right now.
And that's in that 60 to 70%, or was that the 30% on the chances of El Nino happening?
Yeah, I still think there's probably a 60 to 70% chance that we will not see an El Nino this summer. And what that means is some potential for further drought damage in the far western Corn Belt into the plains as we get into June and July, unfortunately. We'll be monitoring this very, very closely. Yeah.
You talked about the eastern Corn Belt maybe taking advantage of hedging some things on that news. I guess mix the commodities and the weather forecasting here about what maybe a producer should do. If I'm in a moderate drought area,
yeah,
what do I do?
Maybe buy puts in 30% of your production. You know, if you're not in a drought area, you maybe buy puts or sell out of money call options in 70% of your production, something like that. There's still a chance we could see maybe corn back to $6 or $7 this summer and beans back to, you know, 16 or 17. But if the central to eastern belt have generally good weather, we're going to see a lot of volatility. We, you know, the biggest droughts, the biggest movers in corn and beans were like 1983, 1989, 2012, the super La Nina. The entire belt had a drought. And I don't think we're looking at the entire belt, maybe again, the western 30% once again. We'll see.
In the time from when we record this, there's supposed to be a rain system through a lot of these dry areas. What happens if the rain misses? And does that already open up the window and make you kind of want to get onto that, yeah, we're not headed toward El Nino side of the boat even more?
This is tricky because, you know, like in 1983, when I lived in Des Moines after college, we had one of the wettest Aprils and Mays on record. Grain prices were going down, and we had the most severe drought in history almost in July and August. So, again, with the weak La Nina, weakening, and kind of a neutral El Nino phase right now, again, with the warming over, I'll do this for the eighth time, the warming over Nina 1-2, the intense warming you see there, right, along the coast of near Peru, warming 1-2, right? Sorry.
I told you it was going to be an ab workout.
Oh, my God. Well, let's notice how as we get into May and June, it still could there's still going to be other chances for rain in the far northwestern Corn Belt and the spring wheat areas. Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota look to me like they're going to have other chances for moisture getting into May and June. There's a lot of snow cover up there, too. It's really kind of, you know, southwest Iowa, eastern Nebraska, down into the southern plains wheat areas, that southwestern Corn Belt plains area, that's the concern I have in the spring, whereas a little bit further north in northern Iowa, up in South Dakota, maybe northeast Nebraska, again, a weakening La Nina and just before an El Nino phenomenon does suggest kind of maybe a wet May or June, but then potentially, look at that, kind of a hot, dry summer over in red over the western Corn Belt. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So some relief. Some relief, but then maybe a return to dryness later.
So don't read into one storm particularly. We got to look at 2 or 3 weeks worth.
No. Nope. Yeah.
All right, James, I appreciate it. Thank you so very much for the time. I always love how you can go back and forth in your flexibility to roll with whatever punch we throw.
Thanks. I enjoyed it very much. And let's do it again, maybe, you know, June or July as we get into pollination, just before pollination. We'll see what El Nino is actually doing, if it's actually going to form, because that can make a huge difference in your grain production, if you're a farmer, of course, and the price moves of commodities.
I can't believe I almost forgot to ask about livestock, because the area we're talking about, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, huge livestock. We've talked about it on this podcast as well as on Market to Market. Any chance for assistance to some of those feed areas?
Yeah, I mean, the price of cattle skyrocketed partly because of this drought the last year to 2 years with ranchers liquidating their herds, which has reduced the supply of cattle and calving over the course of 12 to 18 months to 2 years out. Again, El Nino could potentially form, but not as quickly as other people think. If it does by the fall or next winter, this drought should be relieved by the end of 2023 or 2024. So that would be good news, obviously, for ranchers in Kansas through Texas, but I don't see anything really improving to a substantial degree, at least for the next couple months.
Well, do you see any of the consumer side of things? Because as the consumer goes to look for hamburgers or steaks, some type of beef, and just go, no, I don't need it. Will that help? I mean, it helps the consumer if they stop buying, but doesn't help the producer who needs someone to buy that animal.
Well, it seems like demand, I mean, I had not been following the cattle market as much as soft commodities, natural gas, and grains, but it seems like demand's pretty strong, isn't it, Paul?
It still is. It absolutely is.
I mean, I guess because of just the strong economy over the last number of years. I mean, we talk about inflation, too, having a big effect. So, unless we go to over $2 in cattle, I don't think we're going to see any really major reduction in demand. Could we go to $2? I have no idea. I mean, if this drought was to persist for another 2 years, maybe that's a possibility. Who knows? We'll see.
We would see some new cattle areas, that's for certain. We would absolutely see a long temporary change, somebody where there's some rain. So, all right, James Romer, thank you so much.
Take care.
Never a dull moment with Mr. Romer from Best Weather Inc. A lot going on and a lot to think about here in the coming months. Next Tuesday, another new episode drops of the MTOM Show podcast. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.